Welcome to the Know Normal Show, brought to you by BPD Healthcare. We're a marketing and communications firm and strategic growth partner working with healthcare's leading brands. And well, my friends, we've made it to the end of our Minutes and Moments exploration. Today is the last episode in our four-part series. If you missed any of our previous episodes, please go back and check those out because they do set up a really nice foundation for where we're going today.
3, 2, 1.
I'm your host, Emily Baker, VP of Innovation at BPD, and today we get tactical. This is a really fun conversation between myself, Kelly Nye, HCA Healthcare's Vice President of Marketing and Digital Strategy, and Jessica Schmidt, President of BPD. In this episode, we talk AI, data, and how digital tools are reshaping patients' access to and understanding of care. What I took away from this episode is just how many of the innovations seeking to improve patient experience are also about speed. They're about reducing friction, improving understanding, and enabling more responsive, i.e. better, care. I hope you find it as interesting as I did.
My name is Kelly Nye. I'm the Vice President of Marketing and Digital Strategy for HCA Healthcare. So I have the privilege of leading our enterprise marketing strategies, digital patient engagement, and how we ultimately connect our consumers and patients to care.
Welcome, Kelly, and welcome everyone. I'm Jessica Schmidt. I'm the president of BPD Healthcare. I've been with the company for now 18 years.
I would love to maybe start, Kelly, with a sense of how your thinking around AI has evolved. So when ChatGPT first hit the scene or whatever tool that first captured your interest, where was your head at? Like, what were you thinking and where are you at today?
I think like a lot of organizations, we were rooted in thinking about how this could be an efficiency play, how to give us the opportunity to ultimately understand large data sets more quickly so that we could produce predictable outcomes for the work that we're doing. Also, how it could speed up our work in things like content generation. So a lot of basic functions. And I think a lot of those use cases honestly still exist. I don't think we've cracked the code. What's interesting to me is as we've started to give access to tools like ChatGPT and other AI-related systems, that people are using it willingly, are excited to have access to it, but at times maybe over-relying on what the system is doing and saying. And I've heard in meetings, well, ChatGPT told me this, and it seems like we're losing some of that critical thinking that really has to come alongside of it. So I think where I once, and still am, was really excited about how it could allow us to move faster and could give us insights and answers. I'm really looking for the team to apply that next level critical thinking to it, both in the prompts they're using becoming more sophisticated, and then truly in that thinking that comes after the prompt has delivered us something, be that a piece of creative or a predictable outcome on a marketing campaign that we're suggesting or a part of our business we haven't thought about as much. So really excited about all that, but I don't know that we've crafted the skill to use it to its highest level of effectiveness yet.
I'll be honest here, I was a little skeptic. When I first heard a chat, I think my 14-year-old came home and said, hey, we were told if we use it in school, we're cheating. And so it was an interesting, like, what is this thing? Is it cheating? And to your point about just relying on the output, I love anything that allows us to be smarter and support our clients better. But are you adding that level of critical thinking? And how do we teach and train and inspire each other to take it that one step further? How do we really use it as a tool to deliver on the purpose of our organizations? How can BPD provide value to HCA in new and different ways? How do we really support what your team can do now? And how do we stay with you and alongside of you and lead you guys and not lag behind? Or how do we help you think about it in new and different ways? And so it's been an interesting ride.
I'm totally tracking with all that, just you. I love the cheating comment because I think even for myself, at times when I've used it, I'm like, oh, am I cheating? No, this is helping me accelerate pace. It's allowing me not to go through the 87 versions of wordsmithing something. It's allowing that quick audit of someone who has sent a too long email to get to the root of it, which I think is so powerful. But something you just said made me think that I also don't know that we're using it well in a team dynamic or a team environment. I feel like everyone is using it on a really individualized basis. How does chat become a member in the room? And we use it real time together, where then we could beat it up more systematically. And I had not thought about that until this moment, but I think that could be a really interesting intersect with agency and partner, with team dynamics, so that we don't over-index to it as individuals and everyone comes to the room thinking they're the smartest person having done the AI prompt, but we create the prompt together.
As we are leading healthcare, which is a little behind the times and has so much regulation and rules and things that we need to protect patient privacy, patient data, it's like, how do you run, but how do you also stay cautious? And I think that that's also a big balance that we face.
I think all of that makes so much sense and aligns with exactly what I've been seeing, especially what you were saying, Kelly. I think about how do we get away from people using these tools to find efficiency on an individual basis? Because that's great if you've got this person writing their emails faster or this person, you know, assessing their spreadsheet data faster. But you ultimately do hit a ceiling of efficiency gain, right? Like there's only so much a single person can do. Where the next level is, and I'd love to hear how you're thinking about this within the organizations that you work with, is that systems level transformation, which is, okay, when we look at our workflow, like what are the steps we actually take to get this project off the ground into completion? And then where are the moments or the decision points where we can interject an AI tool or an AI prediction model or some level of technology thinking to get us to a better place than we've ever been?
I feel like there's one we're thinking about right now, and maybe AI is a solution for this, but I think something you just said is compelling in how we map out our operating process and take a step back and really reflect on where are they data heavy? Where are they churn heavy? Where is it just output heavy? And is there a place for AI to be injected into that? But we have to be prepared to feed it with the right level of information or data. HCA serves 47, 48 markets across the U.S. We have 15 different divisions. We have 190 hospitals. And what we often get caught in is how do you scale while also offering individuality where it makes sense? So we have some markets where our brand has been around for 100 years. We have other markets where our facilities are still relatively new. And let's use a simple use case like creative, it becomes really hard to scale the messaging of that creative concept because how do you give credence to a brand that can say we've been delivering babies for 100 years and another brand that maybe hasn't been doing that, but they have these really incredible high-level services that they can offer. We struggle to do that. And that to me is like maybe a beautiful use case where AI could help us inject what are the individual data points about our hospitals, our markets. How does that connect to the creative concept so that we can have an output of messaging that makes sense for everyone without the burden of individual copywriters sorting through that and making sense of that? Because then it becomes unscalable.
I want to drill down a little bit. I think what's so interesting about healthcare is there are sort of two pieces of the puzzle here. There is the fact that healthcare is so data rich in the spreadsheet world, right? Like we have more patient claims than anyone. We have more demographic information and just, I mean, reams and reams of patient data. And we haven't necessarily been using it. So there's the benefit of AI to help us pull and extract the insights out of the data that we already had and weren't using. Then there's, I think, what you were just describing, Kelly, which is such an important point and something I'm really noodling on, which is all that qualitative data, because data doesn't just live in spreadsheets. Your personas can be data, your organizational or institutional knowledge is data. And those are things that like live in people's brains. So we haven't been thinking about how do we put them into a document and feed them into an engine so that they can inform the work that our teams are doing with AI. But I do think that that is a real decision point of teams that are able to do that and the teams that don't or just don't realize that that is the next level. I'm interested if you all are doing any work around pulling in some of that qualitative data.
Not yet, but I think that's a real opportunity for us. I mean, I was sitting in a meeting earlier today and was becoming overwhelmed a bit at the amount of analysis that we would need to do to get the output we wanted to make a recommendation back to the organization that felt sound. And that alone felt a bit overwhelming. I'm like, okay, we can leverage AI for that. But then I thought, oh, once we come up with that, then we have to have the pieces and parts to make that come to life. And a lot of that is the qualitative. And not to my knowledge, is there anywhere that that is kind of cemented or organized? It seems to live in people's brains and their individual institutional knowledge. And we need to bring that to the surface. I also think it will help preserve history a bit. It will assist us in succession planning. It will help us, you know, not lose pace when someone or something critical walks out the door, which is, I think, another advantage point to all this. If it forces you to do those things because there's a direct and immediate benefit, it has probably so many other use cases that we would be really happy to achieve with it. Just get us started, you know, because I think that's half the battle. It's like, get started and then we can iterate. I mean, I've been stuck sometimes on how am I going to articulate this big thought? And lately I've just started taking notes. I've taken my freehand notes. I'm like, okay, just put all the random thoughts you have out there and throw that into chat. And you're like, help me make sense of all this. Where am I redundant? What am I missing? Help me. And it's like, wow, that was the exact thought partnership I needed in that moment. Now I can go take it to the finish line. So all these things we get stuck on because it's just hard to start. I think AI is really uniquely positioned to help us get off the starting line, think critically, and then finish it. And then have a place where it's, hey, we did this 6 months ago. What should we be thinking about updating? And it becomes part of the rhythm versus, again, then feeling like a totally untenable task of, oh, gosh, that took us forever. Like, how are we going to do that again? So I love that thinking with it, too, on the complexities of our business and how we teach that in a more meaningful and real-time way.
I would add to that, Kelly. I think as leaders, sometimes we want to include all the inputs, right? I think it's really been valuable in our organization, very similar use case in terms of taking all the notes, but helping me kind of synergize and say, all right, I heard all these pieces. How do I get to the next point? How do I lead the team forward?
I really like the idea with using custom GPTs too, to kind of keep it in your own thought and make it still feel personal. And I think that's something for people to think about too, so that it doesn't become robotic, that you don't lose the individual in some of this, that we keep that part of us alive, which is why we got hired and why we have the job. Like, want to still throw our personality and who we are amongst all this as well, which I think is something people are a little afraid of.
I think there is definitely a fear to it all. A fear. I know that we're working on some patient sentiment right now, but I think there's just a general fear, of what does it know about me? What's it watching in me? Are they looking to reduce my job? I mean, these are real conversations that as leaders we are having daily. And I think that for our team members that have really leaned in, that have taken it upon themselves to learn more or taken the tools that we've provided and really taken it to the next level, those are the type of thinkers and users that excite me to work with every day. And I'm sure that it's very similar for you guys. But I think that getting through that fear of the unknown, this new, ever fast-changing landscape we're in, has been an interesting evolution.
It really has. And I do think there's a higher level of adoption. People seem to be leaning in at, well, I better figure this out. We are going that direction, but you can tell the people that are thinking critically and those that are not. And that, to me, is like the leadership of all this. Like, how do you coach the people who aren't thinking critically? Like, okay, love that you're using it, but let's think about how you use in a way that feels more authentic to either the work you do or the output you need to achieve. And then, you know, creating this mentorship potentially with people who have kind of curated and figured that out, because you're also then providing a leadership opportunity to those that have leaned in. Like, great, I want you to go work with this person to help them see what you're seeing. And then we just move things so much faster. There's so much work to be done that I don't think we're quite at the point that people need to fear their jobs, but there is a mentality shift that needs to happen, because those are the type of colleagues that are going to continue to be valuable to any organization. Those willing to shift and think and move will always be highly valuable to any organization.
I think it's a really great opportunity for us to finally crack something, Kelly, that you and I've talked about for the last 10 years, which is patient experience. The purpose of what we do here is so important to me. And so the ability to actually have a meaningful role and stance and opportunity to shape patient experience is something that I'm really looking forward to in the coming years with AI.
I love that you brought that up. That's so near and dear to my heart, too, and pushing the organization to providing more personalized and AI-driven information to patients directly so that they are more informed. That information comes to them in both language and words that they understand and can interpret, that it eases the burden of what do I do next. I think the opportunities are endless. I think there's a lot of responsibility on healthcare providers and vendor partners to make sure that anything we're delivering to patients is accurate, that we've done all the due diligence. We have a higher level of threshold for that. I had the opportunity to work on a committee that was focused on creating a gold standard for AI for patient-facing technologies and create a system that organizations can use to evaluate. And it was really fascinating to watch this group of experts from various different vantage points in the industry call through that in a way. It's like, how do you do this in a way that truly feels like you can protect the patient and you can also help a hospital or a provider organization facilitate an evaluation in an effective way and put systems in place for patients that are safe to use, trustworthy, especially in a highly regulated environment. But I feel like we can't shy away from it, because any of us putting ourselves in a scary healthcare situation, or frankly, an easy healthcare situation, having that information sent to you in a way that is personalized to you and your journey, and again, in a way you can understand, is just so important. And it's been really hard. We've struggled for years in how do you translate things into other languages. We don't just serve English-speaking patients. And there's often a heavy burden on our translation services and others to close that gap. But we're using some technology in piloting in some of our ERs that is a tool that predicts how long the patient will be at each stage of their ER visit. And it's translatable into 10 different languages. And it's whatever is native on that patient's phone, it comes across as that. They don't have to do anything to make it in their native language. And things like that are just, will change the game. Other industries are doing it, and now you're starting to see it come to healthcare. And that excites me so much. Just think of how you could impact clinical outcomes if a patient just knows more about what they need to do next. I humbly believe that care can be excellent and never miss a beat. But if that patient doesn't know how to care for themselves when they leave the hospital, the care will fail in some instances. And that is where you start to achieve these next level outcomes for patients, is by them being informed and active participants in their care. And they can carry that forward because we've made it so easy for them to understand what to do next, how to get access to help if they need it, et cetera, et cetera.
You think about Uber, and like one of the things that's so beautiful about the Uber experience is that it shows you on your little map exactly how far away the car is and exactly minute by minute how long it's going to take to get to you. And just that knowledge reduces anxiety. If you had no idea, like, car's going to get here, when it's going to get here, you're anxious, right? And so maybe the first topic that we could get into is one of the things I think driving so much of this acceleration, why healthcare is needing to move so much more faster than it has, is that consumer expectations have changed so much.
I think it was really cool to say in meetings for a while that we want to be the Uber of healthcare, and no one was grounding that statement. And it's about providing the patient with real-time information that they can action on, not actually picking someone up. And because you'd sometimes get funny looks. So we kind of tabled that, other than saying, look, consumers are used to these experiences everywhere else they go. And frankly, there's the means, there's the technology, there's the tools out there that we could start incorporating some of that into our business. So what are the most meaningful points at which a patient needs to be informed in that way? One thing I hear a lot is that patients are really confused, or can be really confused, about what steps do I need to take to be prepared to come in for surgery. You know, I had a friend just tell me, she said, we showed up for a surgery and I just forgot or didn't realize that my child could have nothing to eat 12 hours before. So they had to cancel the surgery. She's frustrated because she's like, why didn't you give me one more reminder on this? The clinic is frustrated because they can't fill that block. Everyone's frustrated and like, well, there's a solve to this. You know, there's a way to keep parents, families informed about what they need to do next. And And again, deliver that in a way of like, don't tell me the five things, tell me the one thing that's most important. So I'm seeing us talk a lot more about that. How do we nudge patients appropriately? How do you leverage AI to not just deliver information that is in averages? For example, if we know it's going to be 15 minutes, you're going to see a doctor, let's tell them 12 to 15 minutes. Not on average, you will see a doctor between the next 30 and 60 minutes. Like there's technology, again, to tell you exactly how long you're going to wait. And setting those expectations reduces anxiety, reduces frustration. Now you, the provider, are in the driver's seat of setting the expectation with the patient, which is really powerful. Because then when you meet or exceed that, you've continued on the path of a more quality experience. Otherwise, you're leaving it to the patient to be like, well, I think I should see a doctor in 15 minutes. And when an hour goes by, now you're creating a detractor on your brand. You have to recover that experiential moment. And you are, you know, you're in a hole trying to climb out of it versus staying above ground. So there's a lot of power in this for provider systems and other elements of the healthcare industry to be thinking about. We have not cracked the code yet. Like I can't sit here and say we're doing all of this, but I think we're cluing in to where those biggest opportunities are and how do you start to eat the elephant one bite at a time? What are the meaningful things we can start doing? What can we test and pilot to make sure we can deliver it consistently and effectively? So we are setting expectations appropriately, but I feel like we're zeroing in on more of that and starting to test and pilot more of those types of things.
I think what's shifted our conversations, Kelly, I think that we used to talk about headlines on billboards and font sizes, and now we're actually really talking about the patient and we're talking about making her life easier. And we're talking about making sure that if she's in our facilities and we're there to give her care, that we're meeting those expectations. So when she tells her mom friends about the experience, it's a positive one. I also think that there's a huge opportunity and something that we've talked about a lot in our work over the last, I would say coming out of COVID, is obviously the clinician shortage and the caregiver shortage, and giving the caregivers these tools to allow them to be better at their jobs, I think also helps the patient experience. It helps with some of the burnout. I mean, it's just, it's a whole new world. And it's not just helping us as leaders and marketers, but it's also helping the people on the front lines there to care for the patients.
Absolutely. And that's where it should start. You know, I think there's a lot of power in putting more effective information in patients' hands. But if you don't have the clinicians prepared to deliver excellent care, that's kind of for naught. That's becomes more of the frosting on the cake. You need the cake fully baked for the frosting to sit. So I completely agree with you. I'm really excited by that too. And hopefully that will encourage more people to get back in and help with the shortage, or HCA can be well positioned to say, here's how we take care of our clinicians, of our staff, of our patients in a way that is technology forward, but not forgetting that there's a human at the center of all of that, and not forgetting when you need a human in the loop. Not everything can be rewired to be a digital output. So I get really excited when I think digital becomes a complement to those interactions patients have with our staff and with our clinicians. That's when I think we've hit the sweet spot. And some of that's replacing moments, but it's truly complementary. I never sit in a room and say, oh yeah, that's right, we shouldn't have our nurses talk to our patients. Only their phones should. Absolutely not. There's some things the nurses are having to communicate that, frankly, we could probably just deliver directly to the patient, and that would create more meaningful moments when they're with their nurse or physician to ask better questions, to know what's happening next. It could reduce some of that frustration and anxiety and create more meaningful moments, which would be amazing. I think those are some of the places we have opportunity, but it's absolutely at our fingertips to do that when we're ready and prepared to make those investments and those leaps.
That kind of brings us into another aspect of the topic, which is some of the hurdles. So I'll throw out an example, which is the privacy piece. And it brings back Uber is another good metaphor here, because we do see that people do give up some things that previously would have been seen as like your personal private information, your address. I can't believe that I give my home address to a random stranger who finds me on the internet, but we all do it because the convenience is so real and the value is so strong. And so, you know, there are those trade-offs where patients are like, I don't want AI leveraged at all of these different moments because I don't want my data captured that way. And maybe if we are able to have the payoff of the smoother experience and the value, we're able to kind of walk that line. But obviously, privacy is a huge piece of the puzzle. I'm sure as you work with clinicians, they have their concerns and challenges. I'd love to hear you talk about just sort of how your organization is working through that.
I think that's why the pace of change has been slow, is for that very point. And the sometimes we refer to it as the creepy factor. How far can you go with patients? We have their most intimate information. I mean, I think the only other industry that really feels that same level of intimacy is probably banking, right? I don't want my financial information shared with everybody either. And so that is probably what keeps our pace more moderate. And I totally track with you. The payoff has to be substantial and real. Otherwise, we're just taking information and we're going to get accused really quickly of not bringing anything of value. And then that door is going to shut. So us being careful about when and how we expose that we have the information, sometimes we can just dial down the creepy. Hey, we could go full creepy on this. But we're actually not going to do that because we feel like that will make this really ineffective and people are not going to buy into it and they're going to shut it down. And so we are constantly kind of tempering that because we do have a lot of information. Jess and I, we're both busy moms. We're caring for not only ourselves, but our children, our husband, our extended families. We're thinking about that. And if you had a tool that was simplifying, hey, Kelly, did you think about this for your daughter? Or have you scheduled this for yourself? Or hey, reminder, your husband has this. I'm like, take my information. So it's such a delicate balance. It's such an important question to raise. And I think that's why you're seeing healthcare move more slowly, because we're trying to dance that balance and frankly, not creep people out or make them think we're doing nefarious things with their data, which we're not doing.
I would love to hear any other examples or things that you're excited about. What are you most excited about through the next couple months? What projects do you have going on right now that you're like, these are really going to be difference makers for the organization and the people that we work with and serve?
Great question. I think I'm excited about a lot. I'm having the privilege of standing up this marketing and digital strategy function, kind of a new way for the organization, how we're thinking about using it. So I'm using AI a fair bit as thought partner and with my teams to make sure we're balancing the realities of what exists today, but where we want to go in the future. And how do we start to map that for the organization to bring them along? So I'm excited about using it kind of in a tactical way like that. I'm really excited about exploring some of the patient experience things we've talked about. We have a multi-patient portal landscape that I think is ripe for opportunity for us to think about how we're injecting AI into that. Some of the technology I talked about with our ERs, I think that is also so critical and interesting. And then for our teams, really getting equipped to use it to move faster. So some of the creative stuff we talked about earlier, I don't think we have to wait for that. Let's go. You know, that is not proprietary. That is not anyone's personally identified patient information. That is just how will help us be smarter, more relevant marketers in the markets where we exist. When Jess and I were prepping and just kind of talking about this too, I work closely with the March of Dimes on a lot of things. And so on a personal level, I'm really excited to see some of the ways nonprofit organizations are leaning into the use of AI. So they have several prematurity research centers across the country, and they're starting to use AI to start to evaluate data, both decades old data as well as current data, so that they can start to better predict the risks of preterm labor. We have less moms delivering preterm. We have healthier babies. We have healthier moms. And I just get really, really jazzed about the power of AI in solving that. Because I think some of the markers that we've used in the past are proving to be, hey, maybe there's a level we can get a lot more specific here and finesse who we find. And being able to use data sets instead of asking a mom who's pregnant to kind of be poked and prodded during research, right? That's the most vulnerable audience you're going to find. And I, having had two children myself, I would have never said yes to that. Even as much as I love the March of Dimes and as much as I want all moms and babies to be, I wouldn't have been able to open up myself to any sort of risk. So AI is opening opportunities for nonprofits to help deliver research and information faster that I think can really influence and impact the industry I happen to work in, but also a cause I just feel really strongly about. That really gets me excited and hopeful. I'm totally in the enthusiasm camp, but I see the risk and I don't want us to overextend it. But I think we're barely tapping into the opportunity and the unlocks will really be incredible. It's really fascinating to watch.
So in an era of ever accelerating change where health systems are working hard to keep up, the innovators are coming at it from different angles. There's the system level, rethinking how we go to market, how we use data, how we build for real-time decision-making.
We've built an entire signals intelligence function. A strategy that used to take us 6 months could take a month. A strategy that used to take a month, we could be done in a week.
And from large systems, how those strategies translate into bold moves, new ways of thinking, and entirely new possibilities for patients.
I mean, I think it's fun to think about what's never been done before. And I think when you think about organizations that have really transformed a category, an industry, it's taking an answer to a question that's never been asked before. And that's what I get so excited about.
I humbly believe that care can be excellent and never miss a beat. But if that patient doesn't know how to care for themselves when they leave the hospital, the care will fail in some instances. And that is where you start to achieve these next level outcomes for patients, is by them being informed and active participants in their care. And they can carry that forward because we've made it so easy for them to understand.
And at the center of it all, the people, the teams, the leaders who make speed possible in the first place.
We've got amazing teammates. I don't want them doing something that is repetitive like that. We got so many high performers and big thinkers, and that's the most important thing.
So what does it all add up to? Speed in healthcare isn't about moving recklessly. It's definitely not about abdicating our decisions or our thinking to AI. It's about building the systems that allow you to move with intention, having the right signals, the right processes, and the right people in place to act. No one's saying it's easy, and I don't think anyone feels like they've fully got it figured out. But I do think the leading systems share an instinct and a preference for action. Even amid uncertainty, and there is plenty of uncertainty, they're asking, where can we put one foot in the other? Where can we start? What's the next best move? Because the bigger risk isn't making the wrong call, it's in making no call at all. That'll do it for this episode and series from the No Normal Show. I appreciate every one of you who've gone on this journey with us, and a special thanks to our health system guests, Nicole Baxter, Kelly Nye, and Jeremy Harrison. From here, you can expect new and timely episodes of What Just Happened, our mini-series where we break down the headlines and cover any major moments impacting health systems and marketers. And coming soon will be our next deep dive series with a whole new topic and a whole new set of great guests. But for now, thank you for listening. Let us know what you think, and we'll catch you next time.